Online Trading Academy is a leader in investing and stock trading education. Sign up for a class today and learn proven strategies on how to trade smarter. Text Curley, C-U-R-L-E-Y, to 57682 and register for a free workshop in Bellevue and other surrounding areas. Text Curley, C-U-R-L-E-Y, to 57682.
Here we go. 9:06. Let's get Tom in here. We got a lot of news to get to, and I can't be dilly-dallying around. No dilly-dally down.
Tommy, get in there. No dilly-dally.
Dilly-dilly.
No dilly-dally down.
Perfectly timed, I might add. Thank you, Andrew. Well done. By the way, what time is it, Andrew?
Time for you to apologize.
I'd like to apologize for anything I might have said yesterday that I might have offended somebody. There we go. That's taken care of now.
Doesn't
you know what?
Nervous.
I think I should give the Above and Beyond award to somebody else. Yeah, you may remember her from her greatest hits from Hey, Nothing's Happening down here at the May Day rally.
Yeah, that was a preview of Nothing Happening all day.
It was a warm up.
Hannah Scott.
Hello.
Deep into the bench of all the Cairo radio reporters.
All right. She's like, hey, got good news, bad news. Good news is you're a reporter. Bad news is you're the reporter.
The reporter.
So you had an opportunity to leave all of the boring May Day stuff, go away from that, and then the next day you got a chance to really attend a true riot.
A true riot, yes, absolutely. You know, that's the way it goes when you're talking about the homeless crisis in the city of Seattle, that Ballard Town Hall last night. Where, I don't know, more than 100 people showed up for a town hall that had been in the works for a couple of weeks that was held by Mike O'Brien. When we showed up there, it was started at 6 o'clock. There was a mock tent encampment on the sidewalk outside of this church. People holding signs saying, impeach Mike O'Brien. There was already kind of some hostility going in, especially because they weren't going to let anybody talk. Uh-huh. Right? You were going to have to text in whatever comments you wanted to make during this town hall. That didn't go over well. The first 20 minutes of the two-hour town hall was all about the crowd yelling and pretty much demanding a microphone so they could have their say. Uh-huh. They finally did. And then it was, you know, a lot of accusations about the Seattle City Council not doing their part to tackle the homeless crisis, not using money that they've had previously from other levies wisely, and the problem's only getting worse, and people speaking out against the proposed head tax, especially on the same day, of course, that Amazon said it was going to halt construction on its office building downtown because of that proposed head tax. So,
anybody get thrown out? Was the police there?
No, nobody got thrown out, but there was a significant police presence outside, at least a half a dozen cops.
Was it organized with posters that were pre-made?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Everybody had big white poster board that said, listen to us. And I think that was because a couple of days before, everybody found out they weren't going to be able to speak directly to the council members. And we're going to have to text or email these things. And people weren't happy about that. So as soon as that came up, a whole side of the room behind me stood up and held their signs, at least dozens of them, giant signs saying, listen to us, listen to us. And some of them started coming up the center of the pews, kind of moving towards the council members, but didn't pass that line.
Let's remember, this was a church.
Was
any foul language used?
There was a couple of times.
All right.
It was rare, and it happened later when people got up to the microphone once they changed course and allowed that.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised because people kept urging, people from the church at the get-go had urged kind of calm and not so much rhetoric and anger in because we were in a church, but there was a little bit of foul language.
Okay, so let's go back and forth. You want to hear it, Tom? Some of the stuff you have a question for Hannah.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I do have an overall question, but let's listen to the sound first.
All right, hang on. Here we go. We're going to back and forth. We're going to go, I'll take the pro head tax, and then Patrick's got the anti. You got the anti, Patrick?
Sure.
Here we go. Single mom supports head tax.
I am a single mother paying for my own house here in Finney, but I know that I'm very lucky to have that house. It's because we have the most regressive tax structure in our city, which is in a state with the most regressive tax structure in the entire country. These people, I do want to address you, these people are trying to do something about that. And it takes a lot of courage to be able to stand up. I'm going to speak. And it takes a lot of courage to be able to stand up and say, this stops now. We're going to stop putting all of our tax burden on the poor and on the middle class. And that's what this is. And I support the head tax.
What's the rah, rah, rah? What is that?
So when they started giving people the microphone, they put a 2-minute limit on it. So they had various cell phones in the room.
Uh-huh.
One, they seemed to be off because you have the little ding. And then a few seconds later, the other. They cut that down to 1 minute eventually. But every time that somebody got up and spoke, that little horrible alarm would go off.
Wah, wah. Okay, here's somebody who's anti-tax.
Your policies of letting them camp and trash our city with no consequences are attracting more homeless here. Just look at the tent mansion down by the Space Needle. They moved here from West Virginia. Couldn't they find a place to camp along the way? And for daring to speak out, we're called Nazis and NIMBYs by Deborah Juarez, your colleague. What about the cemeteries up in her district? They're getting crapped on and needles everywhere. Those are Jewish cemeteries. How do you think they feel about that? I coach soccer, and I volunteer for my kids' school, taking them out on field trips. I should not have to look for needles everywhere we step. Thank you.
Time's up.
Wow. All right. Next.
This is good stuff.
Pro head tax now. Pro head tax.
All right, hang on, hang on.
Why did we start with that one, by the way?
I don't know.
I assume they were in the minority.
I told him to start
night.
With anti, and then he switched it. He pulled an audible.
Hang on, John.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mike Rodriguez.
Okay, Mike Rodriguez, pro-head or anti-head tax? What do you think, just by the sound?
What do you mean by his name? I'm not going to
care. I know.
Yeah, hold on, hold on.
Play the race card,
hang,
John.
Not a race card. It's not a question of his
the
name.
Ethnicity
just
card.
The sound of his, just the sound of his voice.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mike Rodriguez. I've been a resident in Ballard for 7 years.
Pro-tax or anti-tax?
Well, because he's not fuming, I would guess maybe pro-head tax.
I'd like to voice my support for the city council and for specifically for Mike O'Brien's leadership on housing justice issues. I believe corporations need to pay their fair share in Seattle. And on the question of the new Ballardites, those in tiny houses and encampments, I love my new neighbors. They're great. And in my experience, these crime and hygiene anecdotes are greatly exaggerated, greatly exaggerated. And I think everyone should be welcome in Ballard. So thank you, City Council.
Oh, wow. The new Ballardites.
Yeah, that's good.
That is wonderful.
You don't hear that side of the story on
no,
the station.
No, he welcomes
much.
The people crapping in the streets. Yes. Other way. Here we
so
go.
So before I play this, I just this was a long talk about how there's a recent nearby homeless camp in Ballard, and it's causing a lot more increase in crime. And then things start to get a little bit out of hand on either a city council member responding or a community member responding.
By the way, I think this show needs one of those wah, wah, wah when one of us gets going too long.
Will you manage these camps and will you enforce the law?
I want to address this issue. So... It was a question, right? One of the...
Y'all, if you don't want questions answered, we don't have to ask questions. You only want to hear from council
members. One of the sources...
What's happening here?
I get it. You don't want to hear from the community members who are part of the task force.
Six-member task force.
Give us Barabbas.
This is the Progressive Revenue Task Force. There was three members of that on this panel, three council members.
Right.
And this was from the get-go. There was a time limit. We had 2 hours. We wasted 20, 30 minutes of that getting to the point where people could have a microphone.
Uh-huh.
And then at that point, they don't want to hear from the Progressive panel members,
No. Only
the council members. And then later in the meeting, they don't want to hear from the council members either. They just want to have their chance to get up and say their piece.
Okay, got it. Let's see, we got pro or anti. Tom, pro or anti from the sound of her voice?
I just want to say that I've lived in Seattle all my life. And
pro or anti?
Anti.
I am so embarrassed to have such rude and heartless neighbors, quite frankly.
She's pro head tax.
All
she's
right.
Still, the neighbors are heartless.
Well, she's not screaming, and so that would be one reason to think that she might be pro-head tax. However, usually when you start, I've lived in Seattle all my life, it usually is a preamble to, and I've never seen it so bad. So,
well, you've seen it, yeah. So hit one more. You want to do one
well,
more?
Well, that is a two-parter there.
Oh, they do one. Okay, this one's got a problem with John's economic. No.
You're skipping ahead here,
John.
Let me find the right one.
I got one thing. I got embarrassed. And then
let's hear from this.
So that woman that we just heard from continued on, and then it's something that I noticed that I thought was a little humorous. Kirsten Harris Talley, who used to be on the city council,
temporary fill in.
So she was holding the microphone for everybody while they were speaking, and as this woman was talking about Amazon not paying their fair share, you can't quite hear it, but you watch the video, you can see that Harris Talley is feeding a little bit of information to help her with her comment.
And this. City Council is trying to raise more money, and companies like Amazon don't currently pay very much in tax. I don't think it's a big ask. Thank you. Zero in federal tax. It's not. How can anybody be?
Yeah, she's letting her know. All right, here. How about this woman has a problem with John's economic outlook?
I support public housing. I'm a former public housing resident. I've worked 20 years in crime prevention, public safety in public housing. I support a progressive tax. You know, for a long time, we said that public housing was a failed experiment, as if living in a tent under the freeway is a successful experiment. If there is a failed experiment, it's trickle-down economics. Okay? Every time they pass a tax break for rich folks, okay?
Yeah.
That means that burden devolves down to you. That's why so much of this regressive tax happens, so much of the property tax happens, because the services are still needed, mm-hmm. but there's no money because it's not coming from up top.
Oh, God. As somebody who's up top, I pay a lot in taxes. The thing about the state of Washington is you have no state income tax,
but you
pay a lot in federal tax, right? So the top 10% pay almost 80% of every dollar collected by the federal. So when it comes to state, you're right. Everybody pays it in sales tax.
That's right.
That's trickle-down economics works this way. 8,000 jobs. Well, for every one job Amazon creates, how many jobs are created in the economy? 7.
John, you're playing your own little game.
I don't know. What's the game? We hear from Amazon that they don't want to. They're going to put the brakes on 8,000 jobs. So for every job, it creates 7 jobs. That's a hairdresser, that's a lawyer, that's somebody serving them food, that's somebody putting avocado on their toast. If the multiplier effect is for every one, you get 7. So when you talk about trickle-down economics, for every one person making $200,000 a year, you create 7 other additional jobs. If that's not trickle-down economics, I don't know what is.
Well, the thing is, we can debate trickle-down economics. A lot of people say trickle-down economics has never worked, and it's a lie. The trickle-down often happens as the rich are urinating on the people below. That's the only trickle-down economics. That's a Hari Kondabu line.
That's a great argument against it. Did you say anything about the multiplier effect for every one equals 7? That's what trickle-down
okay,
is.
Yes, we'll
any last
next.
Thing?
Nope.
Okay.
No, I'm good.
Well, I don't understand the majority of people were against the proposal. Why? We heard more cuts from the people in favor.
No, and it was, I would say, and I'm taking a guess, but 70% there speaking out against the head tax, 30, maybe even 40% who were there in favor. It was kind of split into the two sections of pews in the room. And not everybody was there to talk just about
I'm sorry.
Tax. Oh, you're cutting
me off. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm good with that.
Okay, so 70-30, what's
unusual about
this?
Tom, maybe you don't hear that?
Yeah. Believe me, John, I can talk over
it. Go ahead.
The 70-30 break, though, is unusual because usually it's the Shama Sawant side of things that are disrupting the meetings and are the most vocal. And in this case, it was like flipped.
Yeah, and I saw some of the people I talked to after this meeting are people who don't always go to Seattle City Council member meetings because they get kind of hostile and kind of out of control. So people came from West Seattle. They weren't just people from Ballard, wanted to have a chance to say, not just talk about the head tax. A lot of these people planned on coming from the get-go to talk about the homeless crisis, the tent encampments around their house, wanting some answers on where the money that the city has already spent, where exactly that's gone. There's people there have been looking for line-by-line item on how that spending has been used and looking for answers. So it was a variety of things. So,
and when you left, did you feel like this is democracy in action, or do you feel like this is democracy falling apart?
I think the people that... I think, you know, it was freedom of speech. People they got their chance to be heard. I think if they had not given that microphone to people, it would have been never gotten anywhere.
Yeah.
I think that they would have never had their chance to speak. And I think that was important. People I talked to, even who were against the head tax on the way out, were pleased that they got a chance to have their say.
Yes. I'll say this. Thank you, Hannah Scott. Appreciate it. Hannah's off for another story. We'll hear from you again in 6 minutes. Most city council meetings occur, 10 in the morning, 11 in the morning, 12?
So in the morning and afternoon.
Right, so the people that don't have jobs go to those things and scream and yell about taking money from people that do have jobs. When you have an afternoon, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, guess who those people are? They're the people that worked all day, got in the car and drove over to Ballard, over to the Lutheran Trinity Church, whatever it's called, and got a chance to have their voice heard. Normally, at 10 o'clock in the morning, who's at a city council meeting at 10 in the morning?
Activists.
Yes.
People who spend their lives doing this. You're right. I mean, I think that's – and that's why we should compliment the city council, as left-leaning as you think they are, all walking socialists or whatever you think they are, that they had these –
despicable liars.
But they offered it. I mean, that's thing. When I watched – I finally got around to watching the video, I actually thought this seemed to be working. They were up there. The five or seven of the people on the stage were listening. They were responding.
I give them credit,
Lots of shouts and all that. So this is a good thing.
I give them
it's
credit.
It's outreach.
Yeah, and they got a chance. I wonder if they were shocked by the response. I wonder.
Not at all.
No?
Oh, no, we know. This is a huge... We've been arguing about homelessness for so long, and with the head tax as bringing everything to a head. And you hear, I mean, you just listen to this on the station. It's such a huge topic. I don't think they were caught off guard by any means.
Okay. You don't think they were at all discouraged by the anger? Because these people, they haven't heard from these people.
Well, I mean, I think they were anticipating the anger. That's why they had it then, as you mentioned, at night where people could come.
Right.
And we heard both sides. I assume most people heard both sides there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of upset about homelessness.
Let's see. The Gates Foundation is pledging $158 million to fight poverty in the United States of America. So good for them, $158 million to fight poverty. I think we spent more than, I think, $4 trillion since we started the war on poverty. And I believe poverty might have us still in second place. But Gates Foundation, where are they going to spend the money, Tom?
Well, see, this is very tricky. And most foundations do not get anywhere near the poverty issue because it's so intractable and they've had so little success with it, and they don't want to waste their money. So what they say is, we're going to look at why this is where its funding would be most effective on this particular issue: collecting and sharing data on factors that contribute to poverty and upward mobility. It's an interesting decision on their part that they are not saying, hey, we're not going to in effect throw $158 million to people that need money. They're going to say, we're going to use that money to be more to see what the most effective way to spend money is. Mm-hmm. What they've noticed is, as the biggest push that they've had in this country, the Gates Foundation, is to work on education. And that hasn't gone well. And one of the reasons why they say it hasn't gone well is it turns out that poverty is so intractable. It doesn't matter how successful you are fixing the education angle if you still have people living in poverty. And they realize that fixing poverty is so difficult that they're... At this point, it sounds like they're just collecting and sharing data on factors that contribute to poverty and upward mobility.
Mm.
It feels kind of diffuse, but at least they think that by doing that, they'll be able to address the issue maybe ultimately.
Three main factors that create poverty. One, you have a child out of wedlock. Two, you don't finish high school, right?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people that don't finish high school that still can have successful jobs. One of the things they say,
you can do these three things.
Ahead,
you drop out of high school,
and
you get pregnant, and you never get a job. That's the three things that start to lead to poverty. And then once you're down that course, so then you're talking about people having choices or limiting their choices because where they are, they're stuck in an environment that's all they see. At a wedlock birth, no high school diploma, and you're pretty much guaranteed for the rest of your life to be in a poverty situation.
Well, one of the things they say is that this new gig economy has created all these dead-end jobs, and service sector jobs are dead-end jobs with no chance of improvement.
Right.
They said that was basically the case with factory jobs early in the last century, and thanks to labor unions and government policies to protect the workers, they finally let those people that were just, you know, your common factory workers the wages were improved and then had stable lives and they become part of the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
So the suggestion is by a philanthropy magazine that maybe that's what we need to do. Make it easier to create unions to raise the wages of the individual private sector jobs, service sector jobs. And that might be a way out of it. I mean, that's an
interesting way everybody pays for everything becomes more expensive.
Everything becomes more expensive, but we create a middle class out of the people that right now have dead-end jobs.
Only way to create wealth is to increase productivity. We'll come right
back.
That's
not true historically.
Okay, right. Wealth is created by the government. Right back.
This Tom and Curly podcast is brought to you in part by Farrah.com. Sell your home without paying a listing commission. Farrah is a new way to sell your home. No listing commission and all the services, from an MLS listing to yard signs to pictures and more. Call Farrah at 1-800-571-FAIRA or go online to Farrah.com. Now, the Tom and Curly Podcast.
Thanks, Keel Mortgage. For sponsoring the Tom and Curley Show. Your money is well spent here because the people that listen to our show are informed. If they're out in the market and they want to buy a house, they're going to call you for a mortgage. 1-888-778-KIEL. 1-888-778-KIEL. The people that listen to our show, they don't use the phone either. Sometimes they just go to Keel Mortgage, keelmortgage.com, and CL53969. All right. I say that at the end of every spot, and I have no idea what it means, Tom. But it says you must say that.
Okay. And so you do.
CL53969. The idea, the old adage, which I think is true when it comes to topics that you should not be discussing, religion and politics. There was two topics to avoid while in a bar.
Oh, in a bar?
You never heard about that?
No, I thought it was at parties that you never talk about religion, sex, and politics. Those are the three sort of off-limit topics at a bar.
What section there for?
Because those are the three topics they say you don't bring up in polite company. At a bar, I would think that you would, I don't know, I'd have to, I guess I don't hang out in bars maybe as much as I used to, but I used to have raging political discussions and all of that. So I think bars are not the place, but okay. I think the basic point I get.
All right. So
there are certain topics
in a place,
that are a little
dicey. When is it okay to talk politics at a bar? But it's always been the three conversations. You're right. Those are the three things. And you get into a sticky situation, whether it's in a bar or a party, wherever else it is, you just, in polite conversation, you don't bring these things up because it causes people to silo and go to tribal sort of hacks at one another.
Yeah.
So the question is, and this is in the Wall Street Journal, they do Google versus Google. And they tell a story at the very beginning of this piece. There's a woman who's sitting out in the parking lot waiting to come in, and she's going to give a speech. She works for PETA, and her premise of her speech is, animals are being discriminated against.
Yes, the animals are subject to prejudice just like humans are subject to prejudice.
Right. She's in her car. She's waiting to come in.
And she's been invited by someone at Google, of course.
To give one of these presentations. Right. And while she's in her car, she gets a phone call from somebody that puts it on and said, I'm sorry, we've had to cancel your speech because people are very upset. I guess they're from what organization? They feel as if...
I forget which one, but the idea is that this is an offensive topic to be bringing out to somehow equate humans with animals.
Yes.
And so that is that raised the hackles of another group of Google employees. And so the Google employees that invited her there lost that argument. The Google executives or whoever made that decision, they're not trying to blame it on one particular single individual, just said, hey, we are not here to create controversy. Mm-hmm. This is not good for the company, so we are just going to cancel it. Well, of course, that infuriated the people that invited her here. It embarrassed them.
Yeah.
And it didn't sit well with the invited speaker either.
So they disinvite her, and then the story goes on to show how Google will have this group and that group, and everybody gets a chance to have their voice heard, or maybe not their voice heard. But everybody's dividing up into sort of sections of political beliefs and religions.
Yes.
And my question I asked Patrick yesterday when I read the story, and you read it as well, Tom, how does this benefit Google to have everybody end up disliking people that they're supposed to be working with because one person might feel that the government does too much and the other person might feel that the government doesn't do enough?
That's right. And for instance, there's a group called activists at Google. There's another group called militia at Google that are actively arguing that employees should be able to carry open carry inside the company. So it does span, although the general organization is left-leaning. There are all sorts of active conservative groups within the overall body, and so there's a lot of clash.
Mm-hmm.
How does it benefit? So the ideal form of this, they say, is that it feels like a college campus and that this should be a battle of ideas back and forth. And they say they get this kind of entitlement sense, these employees, that anybody can say anything because we're living on the frontiers of the internet and everything else. We are kind of dictating things. So let's bring it all on. Uh-huh. And because our politics have gotten so tribal, and it needn't just be the politics, but because of that, there is conflict within the company itself. There are a lot of ethical issues. For instance, if you work at a company and you feel like they are doing something untoward, then you can bring it up with the company and say, hey, I don't think that's a good decision ethically about what we're doing. If we're aligning ourselves, you know, with military drones or something, I mean, maybe people can object and say, okay, that's a healthy atmosphere. But if you have employees warring against other employees, it seems to be counterproductive. And so right now what they've decided is, to quell all of these upsets, we are going to have a committee that kind of looks at things, and if they feel like it's too controversial, they may not do it. They may get lectures about Keats' poetry, that's not going to raise the hackles of either political group unless, you know, people suddenly find political consequences to 19th century romantic poetry. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that they don't want to encourage any more of this kind of animosity that they already feel within the company.
So these are the same people that just 7 years ago were in college, and I wouldn't describe college campuses as a bastion of free speech. So these are the same products
that
have come.
Designed that way.
It originally was designed that way. It's not anymore. But so these guys have come through college where if I disagree with you, I can shout you down or I can demand that you be disinvited because I don't agree with something you're saying because the words that you use are hateful and therefore they're violent. So they've now graduated from that sort of incubator. And now here they are at Google and they sort of want to keep doing the same thing at Google. Right. Well, I don't understand how if somebody disagrees with somebody on a political matter and then you have to sit down and work with them. How does that benefit the company? I think the company, because I looked up other companies' policies regarding talking politics. Mm-hmm. There are a number of businesses during a campaign year, they ask you, you can't wear any T-shirts that have the campaign, your candidate on it. You can't decorate your cubicles with posters and things like that. And as much as you possibly can, please avoid talking politics to anybody.
Yeah.
Religion. Hot point issues regarding gun control or abortion.
Yeah.
Please, the Human Resources Department is asking you to avoid these topics for the benefit of everybody.
Yeah, and so you approve. That's you think the way
to
we
me,
gotta go.
You know what? You're there to do work. Do work. I don't really care what you think about PETA or what you think about abortion or what you think about God. I don't care. Okay. Get your work done.
Okay, but see, part of the idea of these campuses, and I haven't been on one, so this is only what I've read. Uh-huh. But the idea is that it's this free flowing. They think of themselves as different from the old corporate culture where everyone wears the same uniform and they all are kind of in lockstep. That this is meant to be kind of like this free, not easy, but you know, sort of there's a freedom to working at these kind of high-end tech jobs.
Apparently, and there isn't a freedom, the woman who was sitting in the parking lot who wanted to come in and give her speech.
That's right, and that's why there's an article about it. Are they needing to rejigger the way they approach this? And the solution might be that they just kind of say this isn't worth it. Maybe IBM or, you know, whomever, that's just an iconic, old-fashioned company. Yeah. Maybe they have the right idea. Maybe we shouldn't deal with any of these. However, I do think that Google itself is facing a lot of lawsuits, both from the left from women that feel like they are being shafted at Google. And then you've got a conservative groups that are rallying behind James Damore, the guy who was ultimately fired. I don't know if they said literally for that letter that he wrote that suggested that maybe the reason women aren't advancing farther at Google is because they're just not, you know, created in such a way to want to do the kinds of things that guys want to do.
He went into the biology of the brain structure.
Yes. Yeah. So the thing is, now there are conservative white men that feel like they're being discriminated against. So they're dealing with all these lawsuits within the company itself. Mm-hmm. So I do think that maybe having speeches on varying sides maybe exacerbates a problem that they're already dealing with. But remember, what's really crucial for all this, because most of us don't work at Google or Facebook or any of these other places, the real issue is we are now asking Google and Facebook to start editing the kinds of the search engines and the news feeds in such a way that it's more balanced.
Yeah.
And so they are already, they cannot control their own company, or they're dealing with the same issues in their company, and then we're expecting them to be able to do it for the rest of us in terms of what they produce and what they allow for us to search for. It's a quagmire, John.
360 says, tell Tom that yes, that's the rule in bars. I've been a bartender for 15 years.
That you don't
politics and religion,
but you can talk about sex.
What else you talking about in the bar? Please tell me, Tom. Those are the two.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, in the days where I hung out at the Comet, we had plenty of political discussions at the Comet.
What year was that?
Well, when I was in college, the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. 80s? You were in college for 10 years?
Yeah, I was in grad school.
Hey, you think you start
college? It was easy to be that smart?
When did you start college? When did you start college? What year?
I graduated in 1976. Top of my class, Seattle University.
Wait, no. When did you start college?
Yeah, I graduated in 76, so I was 72. 68, 72. Yeah, so I started at 72.
You started college in 72, and you were still in college in the 80s.
Well, I mean, I was on campus. Yeah, I was teaching, but yes.
Wow.
I mean, it was a four-year college degree, and then you go to a grad school, and you work on your dissertation and
get that
teach. Never finished it. You think I would be doing this stupid show if I had gotten my PhD?
You make more money here. We'll come right back.
Have more fun, too. That's true. I don't regret it for a second.
Here you do have tenure.
Hi, I'm Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio. When Tom and Curly fans miss their favorite show, they pull it up on demand. Maybe you should advertise here. Make sure you're reaching your customers anywhere they listen. Give me a call and I'll help you out. 206-726-6819.
If you're new to the Tom and Curly Show, 9:49 every Thursday, we do stories about France because that's Tom's favorite country. Right?
Oui, oui.
Yeah, yes.
Monsieur.
Tom says that if he was able to retire, he would retire and leave the Americas and end up in France. That would be the place that you'd like to spend your final years with your head in a jar.
Not just France, specifically Paris.
Oh, in Paris.
Yeah,
right,
in Paris.
Okay. Beautiful Paris. So let's do a bunch of Paris stories, French stories. Ready? Which one do you want to start with of the three?
Well, let's start with the Delicieuse.
Yes. So Macron was talking about, he was in Australia and speaking about the Australian couple, the husband and wife, that he was meeting with the president or prime minister of Australia. And he happened to mention the wife of the prime minister. And he ended up, here it is, actually. And it's caused quite a stir.
But I wanted to thank you for your welcome. Thank you.
First of all, that is the worst French accent. It's so obvious he's faking it. Here we go.
But I wanted to thank you for.
Is that your minky?
But I wanted to thank you for your welcome. Thank you and your delicious wife for your warm welcome. It's the perfect organization of this trip. Thanks to you and Lucy. Thank you very much, Mr. Prime Minister.
Thank you very much.
Your delicious wife. Thank you for your delicious wife.
Thank you and your delicious wife.
The French men have a way.
Yeah. I love it when people describe my wife as delicious.
Is that right? Yeah. Yes. And délicieux, which is the French word that he was translating, it often refers to like taste and food, like we would think delicious. Right. But it also means lovely or delightful. And so when he's going, well, you have a lovely wife or delightful wife, but he's using the more literal translation. And so it's gotten... all sorts of,
And you still want to move there? Oh, my God.
All right. That's right.
And we're going to go a little Edith Piaf, The Rose.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I'm there, walking along the Seine with my wife to a little French restaurant on the Ile de la Cité.
Smell of hot urine and cigarettes.
Look alone. Dog.
Dog what?
Dogs everywhere.
There are dogs everywhere. Speaking of dogs,
yes,
they now have la doggy bag. 70% of the French say they have never taken food home from a restaurant, although 75% when surveyed said, you know what, that seems like a pretty good idea. Where did that come from? America.
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 Yeah, and if I move there, it'll be the final decline of the French civilization as they knew it.
Now you get your fat-laden food, and you can put it in a bag and take it home. They don't even have a term for it, so they've taken America words. La doggy bag.
Well, they do. They call it le gourmet bag. Bag doesn't sound very French. Le gourmet bag. They are considering legislation. They already passed it with major, huge restaurants. But the small restaurants, most of them have not had to respond to this.
Uh-huh.
But they say it's not because, that we're so Americanized. What they're realizing is that there's a big campaign against waste in France.
Right.
And so they've already, like supermarkets, they were the first country, I think, to demand that supermarkets not throw away their food. They have to give it to food banks.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, they realized that there's a lot of food that goes to waste in a French restaurant if you don't have a doggy bag. So at least the idea is you can take it home with you.
Uh-huh.
Now, the irony for most Americans who go over to France to eat is you look at the portions on the plate and you go,
so small.
That's it.
Right.
You can put the entire meal in a doggy bag and take it home. It's so little, I don't know how much is going to be left over, but still, the French are trying to do the right thing.
Three snails.
Three snails, yes.
Three snails meal. Oh, we missed the third story.
We can always come back to
it. That's true.
There's next Thursday.
All right, write to us. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Rudy Giuliani, he's really helping things out now.